Welcome, everybody, to Dad's Review a Thing.
Drat.
Drat, indeed. This is our third episode of it.
It is, and our second time doing a TV show.
Second time doing a TV show, second time doing a Netflix-exclusive TV show at that.
Oh, that's right. But second time doing a Netflix original animated show.
Yes, but first time doing a first season of a new series, as opposed to a fifth season of an established series. So, still breaking new ground today.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. And we're still, and you know, that's the fun part about Drat, is that we don't ever really know what we're going to be reviewing, because it all kind of depends on what lines up at the right time.
Oh, yeah, and we've got some We've got some outlandish ideas going forward with things that we can do whenever we feel like it.
Yeah, that'll be fun. But for now...
We thought we'd be more current, right?
Yeah, we'll be a little more current. Still pretty current within the last month or so. The Dragon Prince, new Netflix animated series from some of the creators of Avatar The Last Airbender.
Right. Like two of them. One that was one of the creative producers, and then one that did a lot of the directing, if I remember right.
Yeah, and it definitely feels like you can see the connection between the two.
Yeah.
Not just, like, from the writing and, like, kind of the thematical stuff, but, I mean, the guy who played Sokka is another lead character again. It's like, hey, he's back.
Yeah, he's back, and all of his best mannerisms are back.
Pretty much, and I'm okay with that. I think what we'll do for this, we'll kind of do the same thing as BoJack Horseman in Season 5, where we will speak non-spoiler to start with, then we'll start talking spoilers, and we'll let you know so that you don't get blindsided in case you are going through it and you're like, hey, I don't want to know that yet. Well, we'll give you a chance.
Yeah, we'll get as far as we can without spoilers, and then once we cross the line, we'll be sure to stop and tell you, hey, look, we're crossing the line right here.
Yeah. So, to start with, Kyle, what would you rate this show out of a zero to dad? Dad being five. Out of five dads.
Man, you changed the goalpost on me so many times in that sentence. I would rate this exactly, for me, actually, I would call it about 4 out of 5 dads, I guess we're calling it.
4 out of 5 dads. There's one.
4 out of 5 dads.
4 dads. That's nice. And one dad's just shaking his head. Mm-mm.
Yeah. Like only 4 out of 5 dentists recommend The Dragon Prince. That fifth dentist is just a dick, by the way. He doesn't recommend anything.
I would be a little bit more, I'm a little more critical this time. I would give it a 3 out of 5.
Yeah. But I mean, it's
like, it's on the good side of the line. I mean, it's 3. It's beat the spread. It wasn't a waste. It wasn't a bad show. I have just a lot of aspects of it that I'm like, that makes me hesitate.
Yeah, it's not unimpeachable whatsoever, but I would even firmly go on to the other end. I'm 4 out of 5. I firmly like this show. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see the, I can see how the sausage is being made. I can see the connective tissue from it to its predecessor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they're trying to hide it. It's purposefully similar, but it's kind of distractingly so.
Yeah, and I think that's a good first. Well, maybe we'll hold on to that, because I think we're going to get more into spoilers if we start doing that.
That's true.
I think I know what you're about to talk about. So let's talk. First thing that sticks out to me is the animation style. And actually, you, for anyone else who is curious, you already did a Crossing the Streams on this first season.
Yeah, that was my show last week.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good, if you want to just find out about, you know, quick and dirty, what did Kyle think of it, kind of where is it going, how's it playing, that was a great synopsis of it.
Yeah, it's, that was just only a couple of articles ago up on the Media Sandwich blog, so you can check that out there, but in regards to the animation, Yeah, I did just a little bit of a cursory dive into why does this look different? And
yeah.
I think this is the first show that they've done in this style, because this would be the third show that they've done that's had this type of art.
Yeah.
But this is the first one that's doing full 3D animation that's just kind of appears to be 2D.
Mm-hmm.
I think both the characters and the environments are 3D animated.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I think, even in Korra, I think some of it was hand-drawn.
Yeah, they did a lot of mixing by Korra. Last Airbender was still more hand-drawn than it was digital, it seemed like.
Yeah, definitely.
Here it's definitely, they're going all in on the digital. And I'm sure that saved quite a bit of money. Like, it looks... Like, I don't want to say it looks cheap, because it doesn't look cheap. If in any single frame you take, it looks beautiful, but any couple moments of movement can vary wildly in, like, how natural or unnatural it looks. A lot of the action sequences work fine, because everything's moving quick, quick, quick. But just basic interactions, like small, subtle things that a character moves their head, or is, like, in a conversation with someone, or sitting down, like, all of this stuff... There's this weird, like, it's clear, like, the refresh rate is half of what you're used to in animation, and it's very noticeable.
Well, I think they're using a higher frame rate, if I'm not mistaken. I might be getting that totally wrong, but there's something I remember reading having to do with the frame rate that really helps the action sequences look more fluid and lifelike,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of gets rid of that, like, herky-jerkiness that anime has during big action sequences, but
yeah,
it's kind of just like when you watch, like, if you remember the Hobbit movies were shot at a higher frame rate, and if you saw it in that frame rate, it was really jarring to look at, almost like it was like a cutscene from a video game.
Yeah, and that's actually what my wife said. She saw, I think, about an episode or so, because it was one night, I can't even remember one night, why we decided to watch it. I think Charlie might have woken up and it was like, oh, well, you can't watch what we were about to watch. And so I'm like, well, let's try this show. We'll watch one episode and we'll see what we, you know, do you like it or not? And he immediately liked it and I immediately liked it. My wife was saying to me later, she's like, yeah, it looked like a video game cutscene. And I totally agree with that. It had that weird, especially it felt like a PlayStation 2 era video game cutscene. Like, it has that weird unnaturalness to it, even though, again, you freeze frame any bit and it looks beautiful. The art looks clean and colorful and...
And if you pay attention to the backgrounds, they have tremendous texture to them. The stone walls of the castle are very, very well defined. It looks great if you capture a frame of it. I think it's just a matter of very, like you said, subtle motion looked a little, and it might just be that we were used to the way things used to be. We're used to 2D animation. That's what we grew up on.
Sure.
But, other than that though, I mean, what did you think of it, like, world building wise?
World building, I feel, is somewhat weak. And it's going to be inevitable. I'll be comparing it to the Avatar world, because I feel like the Avatar world was built very, very strongly. Mostly, Avatar's world, I mean, it's the whole world. It's huge, and you feel that scope of it to some extent. I mean, they start to pull, you know, they pull the anime tropes where they're just, like, shrinking it all down. And as soon as they need to get across the map... Whoosh, we're across the map in an episode or in a frame or a scene or whatever, just because, you know, that starts to happen for necessity of plot. But here, the world they've set up looks, at least from what we've seen, and feels really, really small. And the first season they don't go too far. Like, they stay relatively close by. So I think, like, altogether we only really see two towns, as opposed to in the first 9 episodes of, like, Last Airbender, we've seen quite a bit of the world. At least we felt like the world has been pretty big.
Well, I mean, another part of that is that you know, within the first 9 or 10 episodes of Avatar, we've also been with these characters for, you know, we've had some time jumps where they've been together for weeks at that point. Whereas the Dragon Prince whole first season, what, 2-3 days?
Feels like
it takes place about 2 or 3 days. So it's only as far as these kids can get within 2 or 3 days of walking, rafting, and climbing a mountain, you know?
Yeah. I mean, maybe about a week. It's kind of unclear. I think another difference between Last Airbender is that the central, like, forward movement started after 2 episodes.
Yeah.
Here's the world, here is Aang, here's Katara, here is Sokka, and they gotta go. Now they're gonna go, and after 2 episodes they're already moving. This one, it took them until after the 3rd episode to get moving. Like, okay, this could probably have been sped along. You did get a good sense of, like, building up, and I might get all the character names wrong because...
I can probably help you out with it.
Yeah, so main character is Callum.
Callum, yeah.
Which I love his character. Actually, like, all the characters, I really like the characters. I don't have any characters that I didn't like, which is why I would give it stronger 3 stars than weaker 3 stars. Or 3 dads. These are 3 strong dads on this scale. I like Callum a lot. He's really likable. He feels very believable in this kind of weird setting. I really like that they have established him as, you know, he's the step prince. He's a stepson to the king, but it's not clear. They haven't necessarily defined what that meant. Like, if it was his mom, or like, they haven't quite clarified that to me, but I like the fact that he has only a slight feeling of, I guess, like, imposter syndrome or, like, outsiderness. Meanwhile, like, his brother and his dad don't seem to be, they don't mind it whatsoever. They're just like, no, you are my son. No, you are my brother. Like, cool, I like that. We don't have to go through that plot line, at least in the first season. And hopefully we don't have to eventually go through the, oh, I don't belong, and no, you do, because family. Like, I feel like we've already jumped ahead from that, which is, like, we've jumped ahead of certain things that would be normally, like, slowdown points.
I feel like by the time we get to the possibility of that conversation, it will be so far in the rear view mirror, because at that point Callum will be talking, you know, rather than, oh, I feel other because you're not my dad, etc. It'll be more, oh no, I failed the kingdom by not being a good enough king, etc. so forth, because that's where it's headed.
Yeah.
You know, it's the kind of show where everybody is going to progress from where we initially find them to an almost unrecognizable degree. Kind of a kid Game of Thrones.
Kinda. And
that's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, you had mentioned that in Crossing the Streams, and I agree with that pretty closely, because there is a lot of ambiguity to the characters. None of the characters have so far felt 100% evil for the sake of evil. Even the main villain, for lack of a better term, isn't necessarily evil. We just don't understand that character's motivations yet.
Yeah, and meanwhile, his I guess you would say henchmen are actually two of the more charismatic characters in the show.
Yeah, and I like that. Like, there's an early interaction actually with lack of a better term, villain. His son is, I guess, the captain of the guard, the army or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I like that he's teaching Callum sword fighting, and he gives him a hard time, and he's supposed to be like the bully, almost like the Biff of this show, but he's also not completely a jerk. I mean, he has moments where he realizes, hey, I don't have to be a jerk, like, especially when Callum, it's obvious that he likes the sister, Claudia, who's probably my favorite character of the show, just for how kind of strange and, like, how she doesn't really fit in this show, but I like that.
She seems almost like a Luna Lovegood character, like the character who's just a little bit spacey or a little bit awkward to the point where you're like, are you from a different dimension slightly, one a little bit closer to ours?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's fun to have those characters because, and by the end of the season, they have their own sets of problems, their own agendas that they have to keep in check. And that's fun. It's very much like Game of Thrones that way, where you don't see yourself rooting for the people who are outright villains in the pilot episode, but by the end of two seasons, they're probably your favorite characters.
Yeah. And I'm already seeing that the possible villains of the show are going to be fascinating to watch. I want to see the main villain more because he's clearly got a lot of mystery to him, and they're doing a great job of setting up that mystery. They have one particular artifact they keep mentioning, and that the main villain doesn't know what it does. And I like that, that they've kept just enough mystery about it that it makes me very curious. Like, okay, I want to know, but they're not going to tell me yet. And that's, there is one, they have let a couple loose ends continue with this end of the first season. Not surprising, I mean, it's only end of the first season, but some threads.
Well, and I think that they were guaranteed more than one season for this. It's certainly set up to where I think it's the same thing as Avatar, where with Avatar it was, okay, we got four elements, so we're going to do three seasons, one for each of the elements that he doesn't already know.
Yeah.
And that works out great. This show, it's six primal energies that magic comes from.
And it's unclear if they're going to do six or seven seasons, because they do mention that there's a seventh energy, and that's like dark element.
That's true. I didn't think about that, but that's definitely a possibility. And since these seasons are going to be this short, I think they can get away with doing that many of them without the show, you know, going off the rails or losing traction. I think that it could last that long really easily.
I mean, it could. I just don't see it working in the same way as Last Airbender worked pretty well, with the three seasons being water, earth, fire. Because the first season is all about learning waterbending, like both Aang and Katara are learning this. They're moving, their whole goal is to go from the South Pole to the North Pole. And that's what they do. And they make other stops along the way, but that's the main goal, is learning waterbending. Then once they have like the conclusion that's all about water and waterbending in the Water Kingdom and all that, then they, in the next book, it's all about learning earthbending. And they spend most of the time in the Earth Kingdom, and they meet Toph, and we get this real good interaction with, you know, everything is about, you know, the earth, and we spend so much time in Ba Sing Se, and the earth, you know, the heart of the Earth Kingdom. And then third season, you go to the Fire Nation, and you spend most of that season in the Fire Nation, and you get more interaction with Zuko, and, I mean, everything kind of culminates there. So that made sense thematically. I think Legend of Korra still kept it pretty good along those lines. Because they went, what it was, air was the first, because she had to learn, that was the last element for her to learn. Then it was spirit, because she was learning how to connect with that side of her. And then...
And that was also the, well, rather, I better not spoil anything for that show either.
Yeah, and then they went change and balance, and that still worked here. The first, it's broken up into, presumably it's going to be at least six to seven seasons, because they established there are six primal elements, those being the moon, the sun, stars, the earth,
the sky,
and the ocean.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, pretty standard. You know, we're going more Western style than Eastern style. I get that. And then they mentioned, oh, and there was a seventh, like, dark magic. It's like, okay. So this first season is book, like, the moon book. It's like, okay, so nine episodes in moon. But did it really... Why was it connected to the moon? Like, why was this, oh, this is the moon chapters. Like, well, what about the moon? Is everything waning? Is everything darker? I mean, why was this moon particularly? Like, there were...
The only real connection I can see is that it was about, there was a lot of content about the moon elves. Like, I guess the specific kind of elves that get their power from the moon.
I guess. So
it might end up being that each season or book, as they continue that motif with the title cards, if each book is about a different kind of magical people that humans have to connect with, that would work if that's the case.
And I'm actually hoping that they shift things up so that it's not always going to be a perfect, like, oh, nine episodes per book. And if, like, wouldn't it be a surprise if it's like, oh, book three, Stars, is a movie, like an hour and a half long feature.
Huh.
Like, oh, well, this particular thing, like, oh, yeah, this is part about the Stars, but we don't have to focus on this too long, so we're just going to kind of do it in this big epic movie and then move on.
See, I thought you were going to go the opposite direction. I thought you were going to say, oh, well, like, one random season is, like, you know, 25 episodes the way an animated show typically would be, which would be nuts, but...
That would be too long.
I kind of do like the idea of, you know, maybe one or two of the books are just, like, 90-minute feature.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, when you think about it, though, nine episodes of this show... How many hours does that turn into? Like 3.5-4 hours?
I mean, at least, yeah, 3 to 4 hours.
I mean, yeah, you could probably crunch a lot of stuff away and turn that into maybe like a full 2-hour feature.
And yeah, I mean, what, about the length of 4-5 episodes total? I mean, I don't know. I think that would be interesting to have that, where it's like, oh, it's not a full, like, new season, but this is still the next part of the story, and so...
That'd be an interesting challenge, but it also be, I mean, you think about how much they've crunched down. You know, I talked about it when I wrote about it. Avatar was a show that was 23, 24 episodes per season, and it gets a little bloated in the middle of each season. There's usually a point midway through each season where you say, ooh, okay, we're kind of in the dog days of summer. Let's move past, you know, this random one where they're just, like, lost in a cave, or this one where they're just hanging out. I mean, you know, by the third season, they would do episodes like that, and it would be still pretty damn fun, because it would be, like, the beach party episode.
Oh, yeah. Some of those
those are some of the best episodes of the whole show, are the rando episodes in season three that don't really affect the plot, but have a lot of character development. But that was a show where you could play around with that kind of stuff. You could have one or two episodes that are, it's okay if they don't work. It's just kind of a clunker and we move on. This show, and because it's on the Netflix binge module, or model, not module, because it's on that, it's a case of we can't afford to do an episode that doesn't work. We need to cut everything down to as basic of information as possible. It makes it a lot easier to digest, which I think helped my opinion of the show. But it also made it to where you know, to cut it down to even further to like 90 minutes or even 2 hours, I don't think that would be possible. Because we're still just getting the bare bones information as far as the lore of this world. Even midway through the first episode, it's kind of like, all right, so that's the end of the exposition. Let's move on to current events.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it's moving either too fast or too slow. I think it's moving at the correct speed, because we're getting a lot of fun character moments with people. The sequences that have involved like character building and like, or exposition is like, oh, we learned that, like, the moon elf, what's her name? Is her name,
Rayla.
Rayla, thank you. I kept thinking it was Aloy, because from Horizon Zero Dawn, Rayla and Aloy seems close. Okay, Rayla, who was, funny enough, Charlie's favorite character.
Oh, yeah?
Who he thinks was a dragon because she has horns, and that was kind of funny, where he just says at one point to me, my favorite character, I'm the girl dragon. Who can run like this, and he, like, runs across the house with his arms behind him.
Like, that's classic, pretty fun.
Classic stealth ninja run. And see,
Robert, he actually liked Ezrin and Bait, the glow toad. Which kind of makes sense. That's the little kid character for the little kids.
And thankfully, he's not obnoxious.
Not at all. No.
The little kid character, Ezrin, could have been Ezrin or Ezra.
No, it's Ezrin with an N at the end.
Okay, so yeah, he could have been super obnoxious, and because a lot of little kid characters tend to go that, I'm so little. Like, for instance, the youngest son in Legend of Korra, he kind of starts to grate on you after a while. It's like, oh my gosh, is this what the writers think that little kids sound like? Because they don't always sound and act like nothing but gross and stupid and. I like that they gave Ezrin enough little kid stuff. Like, oh yeah, he has jelly all over his hands, and that's how some of the antagonists are able to track him down quicker. It's because, oh, he left jelly everywhere. It's like, okay.
Him and Bader kind of the Shaggy and Scooby of the gang, but that's cool. It kind of makes sense because they're not really, they're not really combat ready, so they're just there to like eat sandwiches and make a joke, and belch, and that totally works. But he also ends up being a little bit of the emotional crux of the show because he's the one carrying the egg. He's kind of the Frodo of the situation as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it works, and I guess we're starting to slide into like plot details. So should we? Drop the spoiler blanket at this point?
I think so. As we've established, like, I recommend this highly.
Sorry, you were going to say exactly what I was going to say, I think.
Yeah, especially with kids. It's...
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great show for kids because it's not on the unacceptable violent level. As a matter of fact, it doesn't have a ton of fighting in it. Not as much as Avatar, so I remember. That show actually might not have as much as I conflated.
I mean, they have a good economy of fight scenes where the scenes are good, they're enjoyable, some of them are very quick, and the action works. And here, there's only one fight scene that Charlie actually got really kind of scared with, and it was kind of an unexpected one because he thought that Rayla was about to get killed. Because she gets bodied by one of my other favorite characters, which we'll get to spoilers in a second. And Charlie's like, he's like, things like, she's gonna, like, and I'm looking, I'm like, yeah, I can understand how a 4-year-old might think that this scene is gonna go with her getting her head basically, like, chopped clean off. Because, boy, does she get wonked good in this fight. It's like, I could see, like, if any other show that might have been, if this was Game of Thrones, yeah, you could have lost your favorite character right there, but...
That's true, huh?
Yeah, my buddy, you don't know the rules yet. This is still a kid's show, and this is only, like, episode 5. Your favorite character is gonna be okay. She's gonna get out of this one. Who knows? She's scrappy. She'll find a way out. And, of course, she did. And otherwise, though, great for watching with kids.
Great for watching with kids, and also just great if, like, you're an Avatar fan. I think if that was your cup of tea, give this one a shot. You'll probably find something about it you'll dig, especially just in terms of the character development. Just like Avatar, the characters on this one are great from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
But since we're going to lift the spoiler veil, first I was dropping a blanket, now I'm lifting a veil.
You drop a blanket, lift a veil, give it a hearty clap.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have Dad's Review a Thing.
Dad's Review a Thing, and spoilers are over. Kyle, start with some spoilers.
So, can I start with my biggest spoilery thing, which is, I'm pretty sure it's universal knowledge, but, so... The king got that soul serpent, right? Like, his soul is in that bird, right?
Ooh, I hadn't thought of that, but...
Those of you who aren't on page with me, the king has a bird. They're great with the sidekick animals in this show, the same as Avatar, with Bait the Glowtoad, but the king has a bird, a very beautiful-looking bird named Pip. Mm-hmm. And... the only interaction with Pip after the king is quote unquote killed, we never see him get killed, we just see him being carried out, and then the next thing we see is like his tomb. So and the Yeah, his funeral pyre. And the only interaction we get with Pip the bird from then on is the head mage dude saying to the bird, like, no song for me this morning. Mm-hmm. And then the camera just lingers on the bird for a second who doesn't make any noise. I think the king is in that bird.
I mean, there's something, the king is definitely not dead. That's pretty clear.
Because they glossed right up over the top of that. And
yeah.
If you're killing off your Mufasa character, you're going to do it, and it's going to be a scene.
Yes.
But my theory is he's in that bird. He in that bird.
That's a good theory. My theory was the kind of the more obvious one, which I hope I'm proven wrong then, because I think I like your theory better. Mine was that head mage guy did convince the king to swap bodies, because he told the king to do that. Like, you need to swap bodies with someone else. And the king's like, which is a great scene. He's like, would you swap with me? And the guy's like, and it's like, gotcha. Obviously, right there. And it's like, ooh, that's really good. Like, this was played as a really good scene, because you see that the villain character, and again, I don't think he's full on villain. He's definitely got villainous tendencies, and he is the bad guy, but he's clearly not super evil bad guy. He's just...
He's the bad guy who thinks he's doing the right thing. He genuinely thinks he's doing the right thing.
Absolutely. Which can make him... it makes him a really great villain, because I can watch him, and I'm like, I want to know what he's going to do. Like, he's... if you look at it the right way, I mean, he's the protagonist of a different story, basically.
Yeah. And
that's kind of interesting in that regard. Obviously, he's villainous that he's like, yeah, he's told his two children, you guys have to go find these people, but they each have very different motivations that are also hidden from the other sibling, which is really, I think, fascinating. It's a lot of nuance to a kid show.
A lot of balance of power stuff in between family members like that, which is real. Like, the folks buying this show, just like with Avatar, especially with Zuko and his father, like a real, like, Spielbergian bad dad, soccer dad kind of situation. Like, they have a real thing about bad dads in these shows.
Yeah.
And that doesn't quite extend to the king, but it does extend to Rayla's mentor dude, whose name escapes me, because I don't think his name is ever said after the first or second episode.
Yeah,
I've heard. But, like, the dude that's, like, kind of her Obi-Wan in Assassin School, and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, man, he was a real bad dad, too.
He was a little rough.
Yeah, well, you know, I would argue putting a teenager through Assassin School, it never works out well. We saw that with the Natalie Portman movie. We saw that with every time you do it, it goes wrong.
Rayla wanted to be in the Assassin's Club, though. Like, she made a point of that she's trying to undo the shame of her parents who didn't. I mean, that's obviously going to be an important scene later where we actually see what the parents did. That's going to be very clear.
Yeah, it's interesting that because they kind of start everybody's plot in the middle, there is a lot of background stuff that we kind of have to fill in ourselves, and I think that's why the accelerated pace and the, you know, shorter episode span totally works, is it's a lot of implied things that is fun to fill in yourself.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
There's definitely scenes that we know are coming in a later season. We'll see Callum's mother die, or, like, being officially adopted by the king. We will see, I think, what will we see? We'll probably find out what, who's the general who's mute? Who's another of my favorite characters?
Not mute, she's deaf.
She's deaf. Oh, she is full on deaf. Okay.
Yeah, that's their aunt. Her name escapes me too. I'll have to go through and rewatch the show.
Yeah, I feel like we'll get a scene where we find out how she became deaf, or we'll get more about her childhood with her sister, who's since passed. We'll definitely get Rayla's parents and what happened there, probably what happened in the fight where the Dragon King was killed, or when the egg was taken. Like, these are scenes we'll get. Like, the biggest scene, though, that kind of irks me, like, that we have to get to, which is going to be a two-episode thing for sure, is Rayla. I think it's interesting that the elves, they bind themselves and, like, okay, the five or six of us, six of them, they're like, we're bound. And the binds will only come unbound when we've completed our mission. And they have two bounds. One is king is killed. The other is the prince is killed. And it's interesting that the king's bind unbinds itself. So they're free from that. But the prince one, because obviously Ezrin's not killed. And that's a really, I like that little realization for the characters. Like, yeah, like it will only be unbound when he's killed, but I'm not going to kill him, so my arm is basically going to fall off eventually.
Yeah, it was a really good way for the writing staff of this show to give us a visual storytelling cue of, oh, that whole part of her secret is weighing on her, and here's a physical reminder of how much it's weighing on her. That's very, very smart writing.
It is there. I thought that was really cool, really interesting. They established that the same episode where Ezrin almost dies, but it's clear, like, well, he's not dead because of this. There was a little bit of me thinking, oh, is he going to, like, technically die, but then they're going to, like, perform CPR, and then he'll be back.
That's exactly what I expected to happen.
Yeah, and I'm glad that didn't happen, because that was a little too on the nose.
Get the feeling that was the first pass, like that was draft one of that whole subplot, and then they decided that was a little too cheesy.
The scene that I feel like we're going to get next season, or however long you want to drag it out, is eventually Rayla's going to have to say, like, yes, the other band that came off, that was to kill your father, who is dead for sure, because she just will not say it, and I wish that they would just get that over with, because the longer they wait, the longer it feels like we're going to have now we can't trust you episode, or, oh, now we're, like, hesitant again. We're going to take a backpedaling.
Yeah. I hope we can circumvent that quickly, because that is always my least favorite part of any show that has, like, a collaborative, like, surrogate family team squad dynamic to it. I really hate episodes where somebody's secret comes out and it's most, like, it's revealed that, oh, this secret that this character has been holding on to all season is just there to manufacture a conflict within the group right before the zero hour.
Yep.
I really hate that, because it cheapens that character's entire arc with that secret weighing on them.
Mm-hmm.
Once I realize, oh, that was just there to give them an excuse to be pissy at each other just before a big fight, so that we don't know what's going to end up happening to and who's going to be expendable or not.
Yeah, and it's a form of the liar revealed story, like, cliche, which is probably my least favorite. And I'm always, like, delighted when the liar reveal story is brushed over, like the other characters are like, this is my terrible secret, and I'll go, yeah, we knew that, and then they immediately move on.
Like, oh, that's my absolute favorite moment of Mad Men. I watched the first season of Mad Men going, okay, this is kind of interesting. I really wasn't expecting this to be a show where the main character has that much of a comic book ridiculous secret. Mm-hmm. But, okay, I'll go along with it, because it kind of works with the character being, like, a guru of fake, you know, advertising nonsense. So, okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And then we get to that fateful moment of, he's not who he says he is. Not Cooper, or was it Cooper? Whichever one of the old men who ran the ad agency was like, who cares?
Yeah.
And that was the end of it. And that was the end of that entire plot. And I was just like, oh, that's funny. I was not expecting that at all.
It's kind of nice when that happens in a show or a movie or anything like that. It's like, yeah, who cares? Move on.
Yeah.
Plot is fun. And here, like, I'm hesitant because it feels like they could circumvent it. Like, they could have it could be an episode where Rayla is like, I'm going to tell them, and that's the guilt, that whole episode. And then when she does say it, they're like, we know, or we understand, or whatever. Like, they'll just kind of like, we knew why you came to our kingdom to begin with. We kind of figured it out. We're not stupid. I hope that's what happens.
I mean, they kind of already had that discussion. Like, Ezrin did have the discussion with her when he says, by the way, you know, I'm glad that you didn't do what you set out to do, because I like to be alive.
Yeah.
Like, he did say that much, which I liked. I liked the fact that the kid's giving her credit for, hey, yeah, you know, you were there to kill me, and that's messed up, but, you know, you didn't, so...
Yeah.
So we got that going for us. That's good. I do like the optimism of the show.
Yeah. I do like, the aunt character, the deaf aunt, she's a really cool character. I mean, she feels like the Brienne of Tar. Brienne of Tar?
A little bit. Yeah. I see that. And doesn't hurt that I'm reading the Expanse novels, and I've just run into a character that's kind of that character as well. Just like the badass warrior woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the rapport she's got with the head mage dude. They have like this weird mutual respect, even if it's pretty clear they don't like each other.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting nuanced dynamic. That's one thing I appreciate, is this show is pretty nuanced when it comes to like power dynamics between these important people in these kingdoms.
I like that the aunt and her interpreter, I like that when she and the interpreter just speak, that thankfully he didn't interpret out loud when it's just the two of them, because I felt like that would have been really goofy, but kind of expected. But the fact that, hey, if you can't speak sign language, you don't get this.
And all of their signs were accurate, I read somewhere, so...
I would have hoped so. They have...
Like ASL exists in this world, which I think is kind of cool.
they have a through line of kind of establishing that there are really no broken people in this world, which is kind of nice. That's like a big reveal at the end of the first season, is that... And it's also not clear if the wolf girl and her... No, is it a wolf? Yeah, or like the big dog and the girl, like if those are now like part of the party, or if they were just kind of a detour.
I kind of hope that they do stick with the party, because it gives Ezrin somebody to sound off on a little bit more.
Yeah, it gives
another cool animal character, this one a little bit more of a combat asset.
Yeah, and it was really interesting that this animal, like, the whole plot is that there's this dog that its paw gets caught, and the girl rescues it, but the paw still needs to be amputated, and her father's like, hey, we can't spare any food for ourselves, let alone this dog, who's clearly like you got a dud, this dog needs to go, and I'm sorry. And she rushes up to the top of, Cursed Caldera, which is a cool mountain name. I mean, isn't the caldera just like the opening of a volcano?
You know, I didn't pick up on that, but you're probably right. That does sound familiar.
Yeah, I want to say that, and it's just like, that's cool that they rush up this mountain to go find this healer somehow, and sure enough, the healer comes and heals, and miracle happens, and her fourth leg shows up, which then we then find the next episode. Actually, no, it's an illusionist, not a healer, and they didn't do anything for the dog. They just basically let everyone else think that it had four legs because they stopped judging it, even though the dog was perfectly happy. Like, you know, it's kind of a nice moment of, hey, like, you're perfect the way you are, like, you're such a good dog anyway. It's like, oh, that's sweet. And to find out that, yeah, this dog only has three legs. Everyone else thought it had four, but it actually has three legs and has been doing everything fine. Like, you would not have known. It's almost, you know,
it's a really interesting meditation on the idea of, you know, how different am I really, or is it just more your perception? Because everybody perceives this giant wolf cub as being a giant wolf cub, never once thinking, oh, it has, it's missing a leg, mm-hmm. then it's a dud, as you put it.
Yeah. And I thought that was kind of cool that they established that in a few spots that, yeah, this is that, you know, at least with the deaf aunt and now this, is it a wolf or is it a dog? I could know.
It's a wolf. It's a wolf cub that like grows to gigantic proportions or something like that.
Yeah, like they've established like this is going to be a through line is, hey, you know, there are no broken people, like necessarily, like you have your choices will break you, but not just like.
Speaking of choices, I really wanted to highlight the fact that in places, this does feel like it's destined to be a tabletop RPG. Because especially Callum, like learning his magecraft stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The first couple of times that whenever he uses his breath spell, which is his only spell for a good long while, which also felt like an RPG, like that really felt like, you know, your first session of Dungeons and Dragons where you have one spell and you're going to use that spell forever.
Yeah.
But every time he used it in a creative way, like, oh, there are smoke dogs coming after us. Wait, smoke? I can get rid of smoke. I have breath spell. Whoosh. And it works. That felt like a great session of a tabletop RPG to me. And I hope that something like that arises. And come to think of it, is there an Avatar RPG? Because I'd play the hell out of that.
I don't know. We'll have to look into that.
Yeah. That'd be great.
RPG for just about everything else, for sure.
That's true.
Yeah.
But, no, yeah, I really dug the way the magic in this is a little bit more on the medieval side of things. Like there's, you know, it's way more incantation and, it feels more like Skyrim where it's closer to alchemy than it is to like the force or chi or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that. I liked the fact that, like Claudia has to use all sorts of crazy animal ingredients to conjure up something. It's very, very metal in spots, as I mentioned in my Crossing the Streams on it. They do some very metalhead imagery, like crushing a spider and then using its juices to conjure a fireball.
Yeah.
Like, man, that's some 80s hairband album cover stuff right there. Should be spray painted on the side of a van.
She's a cool character. She's my favorite character, even though she doesn't quite fit anywhere. She's just like, she is weird. She is like a Luna Lovegood. Luna Lovegood. She's like a Luna, which makes sense because this was the moon chapters.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah, she was fascinating. I think like some of my favorite jokes from her is like the one where she immediately like, she's talking to Callum, and Callum says something. She's like, oh, and she, like, runs away, and then she runs the other way. And then he's like, well, I guess we're done talking, I guess. And it's like, that's interesting. And then she runs up to her dad, and she's just, like, pointing, and he's like, I don't speak Claudia. What are you trying to tell me?
Yeah, no, I that kind of cemented her as, in my head, I was starting to refer to her as the Summer Glau character.
Yeah.
Like, that's the character Summer Glau would play, like, okay, you're just slightly off kilter, and it's very charming, but you really need to tell us what's going on.
Yeah. And she's a lot of fun. The other moment is her and her brother traveling, and at one point, like, he's falling behind, and she's like, oh, just smell the fresh air, and he takes a big whiff, and just, like, starts gagging, like, oh, the horse! Like, I can't believe that. And he's like, that wasn't the horse. Like, oh, okay, that's a simple, like, you know, that's pretty low-hanging fruit there, but...
That might be the bluest joke in the show.
It might be, but at the same time, it was played off in a fairly good way. Like, it worked for the characters, and it establishes that Claudia's... She's kind of her own person. She's breaking the mold in different ways. She's not just, like... What I like is that she doesn't feel like Azula, which is, I feel like... I bet you draft one of this, she was Azula. She was the really tough as nails, like, I'm going to win affection and I'm going to be the best. And
like, yeah, it really feels like both of those characters, her and what's the brother's name?
I forget the brother's
Soren. Name. Is it Soren?
That sounds right.
Yeah, Soren. It really feels like they, first draft, they were Slytherins.
Yeah.
And now they're more like a Hufflepuff and a Ravenclaw on the road together, which is so much more fun.
Oh, yeah. I like them a whole lot. I think, like, the last thing to mention would be the last moments of the season of the dragon egg, which is the MacGuffin, and I'm really glad that they finished the MacGuffin. I thought, are they going to be carrying the damn egg for all 6 to 7 seasons of this thing? Like,
yeah, I was curious about that too, because I'm glad that they, it was a little too late for me that they decide to connect Ezrin to the egg by the end of the first season being like, oh, and also Ezrin can talk to animals. We've decided now in episode like 8.
Yeah.
That felt really like, oh yeah, shit, we forgot to mention this in the pilot, but this is his thread. Like, yeah. It's almost like they forgot to include scenes that allude to that up to that point, so it just feels out of nowhere, but
it's also a little frustrating that, and this is something that a lot of fantasy shows fall into, is when he says, oh, I'm sorry guys, I can talk to the dog, wolf, cub thing. And I can talk to this, I can talk to the canine character here. And I'm sorry. Yeah, I can talk to this and I'm sorry, but there's no healer. You're like, what are you talking about? I can talk to animals. And in a show where they've already established that, like, moon elves can go invisible in the moonlight and mages can fire, you know, magic from every which way. And, you know, and swords can be permanently, like, forged to be, like, on fire or, like, burning from the same heat as they were forged. Which I thought was a cool, like, what was it, the sun forged blade, something like that.
That was pretty hardcore.
Like, you've got all of these things, it's like, we live in a magic world, it's like, I can talk to animals, I'm like, what? That's ridiculous. Like, that's the thing you're gonna say is ridiculous? I mean, we already are in comic, like, we're in the fantasy realm, so why is that weird? And beyond that, we're in the cartoon realm, so, like, all the animals are anthropomorphized to some degree anyway.
And they yeah.
They're just shy of Scooby-Doo level intelligence.
Yeah, we keep going back to Scooby-Doo. That whole thing would have worked a whole lot better if we could have gotten a pilot with a little bit more, like, just living with people in their day-to-day before the action started. We could have gotten a scene of the brothers with Ezrin insisting, I talk to animals, and Callum saying, no, you're lying. You're just being a little kid. Little kids lie about stupid crap like that. And of course, we would know throughout the rest of the show that he can, but it only comes to light at the end when it becomes relevant. That would have worked. It would have been a little tedious, but it would have worked. As opposed to this, that might be the weakest turn in the show is, oh, I can talk to animals. Okay.
Yeah.
To what degree? Like, can that help us right now? Not especially, but it's just kind of an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, we had time for that back at the castle, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that. It just feels like it needed one more compulsory scene.
Yeah. That was probably that was a big misstep, I thought. Otherwise, I was so pleased that the egg hatches at the end of the season, and we don't have to drag the egg now, it's just friggin' dragon. But, you know, it's gonna be a kid dragon, but I'm also happy that the very first thing it does is walk over to Rayla's, like, other band that they've tried for this season to get rid of. Like, she's trying to cut it off in multiple ways, and she's out of options, and finally the dragon just comes up and just pulls it off. Like, oh! This establishes multiple things, mainly that this dragon is going to be really friggin' powerful. because he can just like cut through magic, literally. Like this is really crazy magic they've already established. So this dragon, as a newborn baby, can pull this magic off. Like, no, that doesn't matter. And it's also nice that, like, okay, we don't have to deal with that wristband thing anymore. Now we're kind of like, now that plot is wrapped up. That's good. We can now move on with new plots going forward. And obviously in season two, they'll have to deal with, hey, the crazy duo, the Ravenclaw Hufflepuff duo are going to come after the team. Like, they know exactly where they are, so they're going to have to deal with that. They're going to have to deal with, what does the Dragon Prince do now that he's not an egg? Like, how will they handle him? Can he speak? Will Ezrin be able to speak to him, I guess, the whole way?
That's what I figure is going to be the case, is Ezrin and the Dragon Prince are now, like, bonded because he carried his egg, etc. And because he's the only one who can talk to animals and can talk to this dragon, it's like the peace between two nations lies solely on the two of them and their ability to communicate. So,
yeah,
like that's the turn that I like, is that eventually this show is going to hinge on the idea that Ezrin is actually the most important human in the world, because he can make peace with not just the dragons, but also the elves and presumably all of the other magical creatures that are going to come out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
And the funny thing being, Callum is kind of set to be our main hero character, but he's not actually the heir to the throne.
Yeah.
So his heroic arc is not to save the world and be the, you know, Skywalker chosen one. His responsibility is I have to keep my little brother safe and I have to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And that makes it so much more interesting, I thought. I'm so sick of Chosen One prophecies. God, there's no prophecy, thank goodness.
Yeah, that's nice.
Isn't it nice to not have a prophecy or a Chosen One?
It really is. All right, so to wrap this up, Kyle, give me some of your favorite moments for this season.
Oh, okay. Well, I think hands down my favorite back and forth piece of dialogue was Callum gets woken up by his little brother, and while he was asleep, he's essentially having a little fantasy about Claudia.
Mm-hmm.
And he wakes up and says, "What? Did I say anybody's name? Anybody specifically?" And Ezrin says, "No, you were talking about peanut butter," referencing the pilot episode. Claudia does a little peanut butter breath on him.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Sandwiches. I was dreaming about sandwiches." And Ezrin says, "You seemed awfully excited about sandwiches." He said, "One day, buddy, when you're older, we're going to have a little heart-to-heart talk about sandwiches."
And that's a great moment.
Well, naturally, I glommed onto that because I'm like, oh, this is a great piece of dialogue. I'm going to steal that dialogue and put it somewhere.
I love that one. I really loved... I loved Rayla in, like, prepare to meet, you know, the perfectly human Rayla, and, like, look, I'm Rayla disguised, and it's just human Rayla, and how she immediately shifts her voice, and she's like, oh, isn't it great that we're just humans, what with us waging war all the time, or something, like, that's what we talk about.
Yeah, it was, what was the line? I've got it here somewhere. Hold up. Because I took notes.
Yes, you did.
I take extensive notes when I'm writing about these, but it was, I sure do like hanging out with other humans and talking about things like money and starting wars. And I did mention in my review, I think I might have been a little, unfair that the actress playing Rayla, her Scottish accent did drift a little bit through the first few episodes, but
yeah, I didn't notice it too much. I thought her accent was perfectly in line, like felt fine. I mean,
she pulled it together. It pulled together, but it's funny that her human disguise involves a ridiculous, like, southern accent from North America. The typical accent used to describe Americans, which most of us find pretty funny because that's a very specific subset of us.
Yep.
But other than that line, I think the one that I figured your good lady wife would dig the most is Claudia saying, "Drink this. I call it hot brown morning potion."
That was kind of cute.
I liked that. And go ahead. Sorry.
I love the aunt where they're like in the tense situation where she immediately picks up like, oh, there's someone else here. And like, what? No, that's ridiculous. There's just nobody else here at all with us group of heavily armed humans. And she's like, why do you keep talking so loudly? He's like, oh, like we haven't had breakfast. And she just stops and like, breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
I liked that.
Yeah, it's like, okay, this is cute. Like, she's so intense, but like, she's got such a good sweetness to her character that she could easily become my favorite character by season two. And it's almost, it's almost overly comical when she departs from her translator and she's like, she tells him, I want you to lead, like, oof, with my dog. It's like, I want you to lead the mission, to find, track down Callum and Ezrin, go find them. And like the main villain's like, oh yes, he will come with us. And she tells him like, look, he's going to betray you. I don't know when, it could be in a week, could be in a year, but he's going to betray you. So be ready for it. And as soon as she walks away, he's like, all right, well, you're off the mission. He's like, what? It's like, you're going to go to the dungeon basically. And, like, immediately turns on him. Like, that's, I don't know how I feel about that. That felt almost like way too obviously evil and strange, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, I mean, she did warn you.
Yeah, no, I think it plays a whole lot better because every time we go back to the dungeon, he's still there, and it becomes a recurring gag of him continually just being roundly ignored.
And he's like totally nice guy, and they're like, I'd take some berry juice.
I would love some moonberry juice.
Love some moonberry juice.
That was a good one. There were a whole lot of modern day pop culture references throughout this show, though.
Yeah.
Because, like, Callum tries to sweep the leg, Karate Kid style. And I think that even gets a callback later.
It does, where, like, Rayla, like, does that move, and he's like, hey, you swept the leg.
Yeah. The king, I think, gives a little winter is coming gag.
Mm-hmm.
I think the worst one might be say hello to my little friend every time that they use bait to flashbang somebody.
Yeah.
I don't know how to feel about these. So far,
I'm okay with them. None of them have been so egregious to me. None of them have taken me completely out of the moments.
Yeah, that's true. They don't halt the show in order to belabor those too badly.
Yeah.
But I dig this show. I think that it's got a lot of potential. If you remember with Avatar, that first season is by far the weakest season, I think.
Oh yeah, it's rough.
It's, you know, it's just a case of we're still trying to figure out what we're going to do with this. And I think that it's the same thing with this show where they started out, they have a very good idea of the world, the plot, they put together the show Bible of where's the show going to be in 10 episodes, where's the show going to be in 30 episodes, up to 100 episodes.
Yeah.
And I think they've got a great grasp on all of that, but it's all the character stuff that really shines, and I think that's because that stuff's not as meticulously planned out, and they just kind of let it be a little more organic.
Yeah.
That's the way it looks to me, at least.
I think this is going to go in a good direction. I'm excited for, you know, I mean, it'll be obviously a year at least until we get season two.
They did announce a season two at New York Comic Con this last weekend.
Okay. I'm excited for it. I'm excited. I know there's a lot of good buzz. People, you know, I saw enough people talking about it. I was like, okay, you know. The one thing is, if you watch the trailer on Netflix, that's a bad trailer.
Yes, it is. That is a very bad trailer. Yes.
It has a lot of groaner lines where I saw the trailer and I didn't know if this was supposed to be a good show or a bad show, because I saw the trailer and I'm like, this is terrible. They have like obvious terrible lines where you have like Rayla see the egg and say, this changes everything. I'm like, that's such a cliche line. Tell me that's not really how that scene plays out. And it doesn't. That scene thankfully doesn't play out that way.
Yeah, it feels almost like my go-to example of this is Suicide Squad, where it almost feels like every line in the trailer was written to be a trailer line. Like they had to put it in somewhere so that they could put it in the trailer later.
Yeah, like that, the line with Claudia is like unstoppable is just another form of stoppable. Like, no, that's not how that works. It's like that line didn't work. It barely, like, it worked once you get established with the character a little bit, but otherwise, the trailer does not do a good job of showing what's gonna happen and like, getting you hyped. The trailer can have the opposite effect, I think, so ignore the trailer, just go into the show, and kinda go from there.
Yeah, and don't, you know, feed that urge that you might have in the pilot episode to hit pause and maybe go back and go over the explanation stuff again, because once you've got a basic understanding of things, it all kind of fills itself in. You're not going to get lost. You don't need an appendix with this, but you might go over it once or twice just to make sure that you've got a good grasp on it.
Yeah.
Because they will not stop to explain it again.
They will not. My final word on this, final just thing to point out, is the intro sequence is beautiful. And
oh, yes.
Stunning, because, I mean, it's just basically recovering the scene that they established at the beginning of the show, which is this big conflict between the humans and the magical beings, which is at this big gate. And you see the big white dragon prince, or the Dragon King at the time, like, standing up, you know, before this giant army that's, like, basically not wanting to make the first move. And the intro just has this great, basically silent intro. No, like, it's thankfully not Avatar style of, like, our world used to be connected, but then everything changed when...
They do that at the beginning of the pilot episode, and it feels very, very Avatar-esque. Like, it's uncomfortable how much DNA from that original show is in this one.
Yeah.
But thankfully, after the pilot, they cut that out with the intro. Yeah.
And that intro, like the shot they leave it on when they give you the title card with this, the Dragon Prince, that's an amazing backdrop and an amazing, like, tone to set for the whole show of, like, this is eventually where we're going to have to be. We're going to be at a moment that feels this impressive, and both, like, it's an awesome moment in the truly, what, you know, the true meaning of awesome. You will be filled with awe in that moment. As the humans are like, I don't want to move, and the dragon's like, I am in charge of this. How are we going to play this? Like, that's a cool shot. And that alone gets me excited for where they're going to go, because it shows, like, they got a good head on their shoulders. They know they're doing enough things very right that the few things that I've really groused about, I mean, I even feel kind of bad giving it a 3 out of 5. I think mostly because of that, it's just because the animation feels really weird and choppy to me, and I don't know. Like, it's not bad necessarily, it's just I'm having to get used to it was kind of strange to me.
Yeah, I would say it definitely, I watched it on both, my phone and on a full TV screen, and it does play better on a big screen than it does on a small screen, but visually it's different. You'll notice a difference, but I liked it myself. But I'm an easy sell when it comes to animation. I think that all animation is its own form of alchemy, where I'm like, how did you do that? It's like, it's really simple. They've been doing it since, like, the 1800s. I'm like, no one, clearly that has to be magic, otherwise everyone would do it.
Yeah.
So, that's how I feel about animation. I think it's all magic because I'm a child.
There you go.
But, no, yeah, I will give it a firm 4 out of 5. I think that it's a great show that has structural issues just because it is for the streaming and binging model. And I think that this type of show has never been done with that in mind. I do hear good things about the Netflix Voltron show is kind of that way. Those are short seasons, but they're also frequent seasons, if I remember right.
I'm surprised they're on season 7. I thought, wait, didn't that just start like a year or two ago?
Yeah, I think they do seasons a lot, like multiple seasons a year.
Yeah, it has to be, because I was like, that didn't start 7 years ago, did it? I'm like, season model has broken me completely.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, like the 23, 24 episodes of a half hour show per season, I've been grousing for weeks now that needs to go away because it's an outdated model that makes no sense anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have so many different shows that return so many different times a year, especially reality TV has like 2 seasons a year anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason to have like sitcoms be 23, 24 episodes a season. It should just be like 10 or 12 episodes. And they've been doing that with shows like The Good Place. And I recently started watching Superstore and they did that as well.
Mm.
And I think it kind of works a lot better with streaming shows too. HBO and Netflix and Hulu have kind of come to this agreement of 10 episodes, that's a season of television. If it's good television and if they're meaty enough episodes, you can get it done in 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad that that's the trend now because, ooh, man, like, you can, especially if you go back to the dawn of the golden age of television, like The Sopranos and stuff like that, you get, every once in a while, they would do a double season where it's like, oh, yeah, season 3, part 1 and part 2. And
mm-hmm.
It's like, you're not fooling anybody. That's season 3 and that's season 4.
Yep.
I hate that stuff. It's what causes shows to have a lot of bloated nonsense in the middle. It's what causes the Marvel Netflix shows to have 2 or 3 too many episodes per season, almost all of them. So I'm really kind of glad that this one they decided to go with just that. Was it only 9?
Only 9.
Only 9. I'm glad that they went that direction with it. It's also its biggest hurdle to get over, and it does for me in most regards.
Well, looking ahead, next week is Portland Retro Gaming Expo, which is exciting.
Oh, yeah. And you've got a panel at that, correct?
I do. Sunday at, I think, 2, me, Rue, and Norm, the game historian, will be on a panel called A Localization is You. And we'll be talking about localization.
That sounds great.
That'll be a lot of fun. Otherwise, Kyle, where can they find us online?
Oh, they can find us at a lot of places. There is our written work, which includes not just my stuff, but also you, Chris, have been writing while riding your exercise bike as well, the same as me, only you're playing some video games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called Riding the Backlog, which I was looking to post your 4th one today, but I'm having computer issues a little bit with it. If not today, tomorrow. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun. People have been really digging. Chris is going through Super Mario RPG, one of his favorite games that I've heard a whole lot about.
Oh yeah.
And you can find that plus my written stuff, including Crossing the Streams, where I talked about Dragon Prince, along with all sorts of other stuff over at media-sandwich.blogspot.com. And if you want to keep up to date with that, we've got a Facebook page that's a Media Sandwich Podcast Show. Or you can find us on Twitter at media_sandwich. Or I'm at Kyle Martinak. And you are?
I'm at the Chris Pranger.
Yes, sir. And You can find everything there. You can find Drat as well as the Media Sandwich show itself on all of your favorite iPlaces, iTunes, iPodcast, iWhatever. They're all I now, right?
All of them.
Yeah, but it's actually on Stitcher and Google Play as well. Those, that was what I was grasping for.
Well,
and
that?
That's all the stuff, that's all the plugs.
That's all the plugs. For next Drat, we'll be back with something different. We can't do another Netflix show next time. As much as I want to rip through Maniac, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure we could do that, but at the same time, we can't become the Netflix review show. Dad's got to review a different thing. So next time, it's going to be Dradit, because Dad's review a different thing.
I like it. It's Drat with that second D that's kind of silent.
Drat.
Yeah.
So we will see you there.
Bye.